Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Mike O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman in not-so-sunny Boulder, Colorado. Hello, sir.
We got some sort of rain, snow, sleet mix outside, but 60 and clear here at Boulder Pickleball, as usual. Let's go.
Whenever it rains here in Southern California, I call Homeland Security because it's not, I don't know what that is. It's a whole thing. Today, we're going to do something that I haven't heard spoken about too much in the pickleball zeitgeist, and that is targeting. And what I mean by targeting, and I'm here to explain as much as I can and learn as much as I can from you, as always, Scott. But what I mean is hitting a ball intentionally where you can put your opponents in the most discomfort, whether it's at their feet or in their shoulder or their hip. We're going to get into all the specifics, but I want to sort of harken back to a phrase you said literally like episode one or two, which was intentionality. And I would love for you to define that in the context of pickleball and how pros think about the shots before they hit them.
Yeah, let me start with kind of a 3-0 to 4-0 approach to intentionality. Players here really should not just be winging it. They should have a high level of intentionality when it comes to selecting between option A, softly, patiently placing the ball at the feet of your opponents, leveraging the poor bounce of the ball and the non-volley zone, or option B, some sort of attack or instigation. And with few exceptions, these are pretty much our choices. There's nuance from there. We can definitely drill down from there. But from 3-0 to 4-0, we need to make sure that we've picked A or B. Obviously, on the 4-0 to Pro show, we want to take that up a few more notches. So once we've selected A or B, let's go ahead and pick our targets. Let's go from there and we'll go through a list of reasons why we want to pick particular places on the other side, either directly at or in between our opponents.
So the idea of, well, let me just get this ball over needs to completely fade away by 4.5 or something like that, where you actually have some sort of intention behind these shots.
Great. Now that we've identified the importance of intentionality, let's talk about three different scenarios where we want to be intentional and considering our targets. Dinking, speed ups, and drops. And we'll start with dinking. As we've shared on this show, especially during our one-hour drilling session show, I like to use straight-up dinking as part of my warm-up, get my side shuffle moving, oil up the knees, get moving a little bit, keep my shoulders level with the net. But it's not really where we want to be thinking about targeting, because the straight ahead dink is not as favorable as our cross court dink. So once we get going cross court, once we've found our apex and settled in a little bit, let's get intentional with our targeting. I really like the corner for sure. Everybody's familiar with that ball, but I want to clarify that the middle dink at this level of play in a right-handed world should not necessarily be at the tee between the service line and the kitchen. I like to go ahead and favor 8 to 10 inches toward the right side player and their left foot. And if I'm on the left side and I'm practicing my dinking or I'm in the middle of a rally, I want to make that middle dink confusing for the two players. And either I get the right side player to hit a low backhand, hopefully a pop-up, or I get the left side player to come on over and help them out, but that vacates their side of the court and opens up some opportunities for us.
Just to clarify, if you are targeting that left foot of the right side player, are you typically on your default right side when you're playing with Scott Moore in the NPL? Or is this whether you're on the left or the right side? Generally, we don't want to dink straight ahead. So I'm assuming that when you say this about targeting, that you're going cross-court to cross-court on the right?
No, I'm also talking about when I'm on the left. When I'm on the left, I'm going to either be, and probably predominantly, dinking to the corner, to their low backhand, the opposite side, left side player. But to switch things up, instead of thinking about a full-on middle dink, I'm going to bring that dink over a little bit towards the side of my heads-up player. So that's my middle dink, instead of the one just at the tee. That's too easy for the left-side player to use their forehand. I want to cause a little confusion with that dink and hopefully either make the guy straight in front of me hit a low backhand pop-up or bring the diagonal player over to have to help out with the forehand, and that leaves them with too much court behind them exposed.
So as we're warming up, let's say we're forehand-to-forehand cross-court. You might hit a few targets to the corner. You might hit a few targets towards their left foot. Yep. Is there any other spots that you work with while you're in that mode? And then talk us through the backhand version of that, what your two or three targets are with backhand dinking.
So drilling down on right side dinking cross court, I really have two targets. I either have the corner to my opponent's forehand. Hopefully they're a little off balance and I can get them leaning, get their shoulders off axis, and perhaps they pop it up. Or their left foot. I want them to hit a low backhand or have their partner come over too far to help out with a forehand. Those are my only options in general. I'm specifically targeting right side. Now, left side, I am targeting their low backhand out to the corner. That's super common. Everybody loves that shot. And I'm suggesting that instead of mixing that up with a middle dink to their forehand, let's push that one over a little bit further across the center line to the player directly in front of me, to their left foot, to either produce a high pop-up backhand from them or force my diagonal opponent to come over a little bit too far. So it's still only two options, their low backhand to the corner or a middle dink that's pushed over a little bit toward their partner's side.
So you're saying in totality, you're really only targeting four spots while you're dinking, both outside edges and then actually three spots, both outside edges and then the right side player, left foot. Those are your three primaries. Does that sound about right?
Simple enough.
Wow. That is fascinating by itself, dude. I don't know about you guys, but that really simplifies even warming up and understanding that these are the spots I need to target. I think maybe the gem in here, Scott, is that left foot of the right side player. I think we all sort of target the outside edges, but that little left foot, my left foot, is probably the real gem of the dinking portion of this show.
Now, vertically speaking, how far do I want to dink this ball toward their left foot? I'm kind of gauging the height and reach of the left side player, because sometimes I've gotten a little greedy trying to get this ball to bounce at the kitchen line or even slightly beyond. And that left side player with their, you know, long reach sticks their forehand in there and makes me pay for it. They get it out of the air.
Now, at the pro level, I imagine this isn't as much of an issue, but I imagine in the 4.0 to pro level, there are probably people that we face that aren't super comfortable hitting an ATP. You know, they just don't have that in their arsenal as commonly as others do, certainly at the highest level. I suppose if you see that they have some weakness there, you can really think about that corner and dinking them wide, because you know there's not some huge penalty on the other end. I don't know how often you come across something like that, because I imagine most people you play with have a pretty solid ATP, but is that a thing?
Yeah, I would like to credit one of my favorite playing partners and coaching partners, Jill Braverman, for sharing with me or corroborating my thoughts on this. Jill says, let's make them prove to us how good their ATP is before we adjust our angle. Let's get them moving. Let's not dink directly at them. Let's push it a little bit. And if we win three or four rallies and then they get their ATP, we're still up 4-1.
Right.
You know, you only get 1 point for an ATP. So I really like that. And I've shared that with a number of 4-0 to 4-5 type players, and it works. Let's find out. Now, obviously, the backhand ATP is a little bit more difficult for most players. So we can get a little greedier with the angle toward their backhand and be a little bit more aware of it on the forehand side. But I just suggest to our listeners, go ahead and push it and find out about their ATP before you worry about it.
Probably have that conversation as well with your partner. Hey, I'm going to swing these guys wide often. So just be prepared to defend that ATP if you see me doing that. That way they're not surprised and they're taking a couple of steps back, getting their paddle low, going towards the sideline and being able to defend that ATP just in case. At least you're telling them that this is the strategy.
Fully agree.
So this, Scott, is to me the meat on the bone of this targeting. And this is really the area that I don't hear people talking about too much, which is speed up targets. Certainly not in this context of 4.0 to pro. I just don't hear people identifying the weaknesses on the other team and saying, hey, let's target blank. I just don't hear it enough. So that's why I wanted to have this show and talk about this thing very specifically. So I think one of the things we should do, and we probably don't do at all, is while we're warming up, if you're in a tournament setting or even just getting to the courts, identify their default shields. This dovetails into the conversation we just had last week and the week before about where is their default shield. We talked about the Hydra defense in the last episode. How are they holding their paddle? Are they always in backhand shield? And if so, do we really start thinking about right shoulder to make them chicken wing every time?
Well, you've referenced it accurately, as it starts with identifying how your opponent, ideally directly across from you, holds a paddle. And if they're anywhere near continental, or what I like to call easternental, which is still pretty close to continental, then very likely the backhand shield is more comfortable for them, because it's very difficult to hold up the lollipop or hold up a stop sign with that grip. Players who prefer an eastern or semi-western forehand grip, when they hold up their paddle, it shows the entire face of the paddle to the other side. It's very easy to lay your wrist back in that direction. Those players will often use the tomahawk or that kind of extended windshield wiper forehand only side when playing a ball to their usual backhand side. So it's pretty easy to identify before you've even seen them hit a ball with the way that they grip a paddle. From there, we can begin to identify the targets for sure. And with most players still preferring to guard their body, to defend their body with a backhand side, then their playing side shoulder should be target A. We definitely want to start with that. So that's what I identified with you, is your default shield before we talked a lot about it was primarily backhand, which exposed your right shoulder. And I started our chess match accordingly, picking on the right shoulder until such time that you began to catch on and guard against that, sliding a little bit to your right. So I started targeting a little bit more to where you were, and that was confounding for you.
It's true. Very true. Weirdly, I hadn't even considered this grip change lollipop idea where I'm holding up in that default forehand to protect my right shoulder. But of course, because you're you, as soon as I started doing that, and I think I hit three in a row right back, you then targeted my left hip, which is the opposite. Again, we're sort of going diagonally opposite of where the person is at the moment. What do you do when their default shield is straight out, like it's straight towards you, and you can't really identify which way it is? Is that a thing?
Yeah, great question. I'm still gambling that most players in early 2024 are holding a continental-ish grip and therefore prefer a backhand shield. So if they've not tipped their hand at all, I'm still going playing side shoulder. And let me clarify that I really prefer shoulder over hip, primarily because I don't want to take this speed up opportunity and put it in the net. And boy, that hip is awfully close to the net. Whether it is an attack or an instigator, I prefer the shoulder. If their paddle's down at all, that's a couple of feet away from where their paddle is, and I don't want to put this ball into the net tape.
So the only thing we need to be really cognizant of is if they're really good at dodging and we miss their right shoulder and the ball goes deep by 3 feet. Sometimes it's unavoidable because you're trying to get the ball on them as quickly as possible. And if they matrix out of it, you go, all right, well, they matrix out of it. That was a good shot, probably going long anyway. Do you tend to try to regulate the speed of that so it at least stays in the court, or does that become secondary to the target?
Let me clarify my terms. I do find a difference between attack and instigate. Attack, frequently the ball that I'm about to hit is above net level and I can hit down if I choose to. My preference there is to hit the ball down the middle of the court in between the two players. An instigator is a ball that's below net level, and by definition, I'm going to have to hit up. And as such, I'm going to have to regulate the angle of attack, meaning higher, steeper angle up toward their shoulder, and definitely moderating pace on that. And at 4.0 to pro, let's add a little topspin while we're at it. So you mentioned getting the ball on them as fast as possible. I want to qualify that a little bit. I like getting the ball on them 20% faster than they're expecting. Mm. that is going to lead to potentially, and that's my number one wish, is a pop-up return. And I'm choosing to instigate because they're just not giving me a pop-up. Our dinking alone, even with our good targeting, is not leading to a meatball. So I need to stir the pot. And as such, I'm not looking to hit a one-shot winner from below net level. I'm looking to coax a pop-up out of them. So I don't need it to be all that fast. I do prefer a foot long is better than an inch low, and that rules out 3 feet long. So I'm okay with a little bit long. They'll hit most of those.
When you're targeting someone, you're not necessarily targeting them to body bag them. You're targeting them to get a shot that you can then put away, or two shots that you can put away. You're trying to put them in discomfort, make them save a ball like a hockey goalie, and then that subsequent ball is the one you get to put away. So I think a mistake that a lot of people make is they go for that high velocity shot to their right shoulder. And if the person dodges it, it hits the fence. It's 9 feet out. It's not a foot long or an inch low. So I think having the understanding that we're targeting not with this shot in mind, but the following shot, and to be ready for it. Hit the shot, split step, get ready, get balanced, get a stable base, and put that next ball away, or at least you're ready for that next response. But having a very intentional spot to target is the key. And then knowing that that's not the end of the point, to me, is the second key.
And that's a great explanation of our intentionality when instigating. And instigating, again, the ball that I'm about to hit is likely below net level. If I were to target in between the two players from below net level, that ball is going to end up chest high and one of them is going to stick their paddle out and cream it, unless we're at 3-0. And then we can slip that ball between the two of them. So let's clarify again. My target, when the ball I'm about to attack is above net height, I'm hitting the ball into the open spaces. Primarily, I'm going to hit the ball hard and down and in between the two players. Or if they're leaning middle, I'll go out to the corners. I'm not trying to hit them. I'm not targeting a player. The only time I'm really targeting a player, and 9 times out of 10, the one right in front of me, is when I decide to instigate on a ball that is below net level because we're just not getting the meatball from them. I need to coax it from them. And that's when I'm going to go at the player, not the spaces in between. And then we're going to start that chess match of right shoulder. And then maybe if they guard that, then I'll find a different spot on them and off we go.
Well, Scott, if we are drilling with someone cross court and we're trying to find balls to instigate on targeting that right shoulder, it's very helpful to have a Diego, which is our little drill partner. Do you want to talk a bit about not only the Diego you have, but the Diego that soon will be?
For sure. There's only two of you on the court. We are looking at a cross-court ball that we want to instigate straight ahead. So it's nice to have a target. I picked up a couple of years ago a couple of soccer dummies that are designed for that. And it's just great. They're 6 foot and they don't talk back. And it's a great targeting exercise. We do have in the works a pickleball-specific Diego coming soon. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, get yourself a 6 foot target on the other side. And don't forget, as we referenced on the show, that two-on-one drilling, three-person drilling, this is a great time to be able to do that. Take that cross-court ball and instigate at the player directly in front of you.
So we have dinking targets, we have speed-up targets, and let's talk a bit about drop targets. We've referred to this quite often, actually, in the last few episodes, where it's very difficult, unless you're playing a skinny singles, which really teaches you to regulate how deep you drop a ball because you're very often dropping straight ahead of you, which we don't normally do. We're talking about dropping cross court, or at least giving yourself the best chance where the net is the lowest, if possible, and you've got the most time to move yourself up to the kitchen line. So you're about, let's say, a foot in front of the baseline to about the kitchen. Where are you thinking, Scott, to target that ball?
In the scenario that you're describing, Michael, I have made the calculation that both of my opponents' feet are firmly planted at the non-volley zone. I no longer have a set of feet in the transition area at which to aim. That would be preferable, but at this point, I'm guessing we're at a fifth shot, seventh shot, ninth shot, and both of our opponents are at the non-volley zone. This is an area where 3.4 level players do make the mistake of trying to hit a lukewarm line drive or a lob or no intention a lot of the time. But from forward to pro, the shot selection here should be limited to pretty much one. We need to drop this ball into the kitchen. That there's really no other thing that we can do here. And let's just use our geometric knowledge. And as you referenced already, if I drop straight ahead, I get 7 feet of kitchen to drop into. If I move towards the middle, I get a slightly lower net, and I picked up about 4 or 5 inches along this hypotenuse. But if I go cross court, and I've been breaking out the measuring tape lately on my teaching court, we get up to 10 and a half feet from the net to the corner of the kitchen. So if I've decided in whatever predicament that I'm in the transition zone, that I have to get out of this predicament, I am 100% of the time focused on cross court because that's my best chance of dropping that ball into the kitchen.
I'm still shocked from hypotenuse. I'm literally looking it up knowing, what was that again? I don't remember it from eighth grade. That's very impressive. I was going to ask.
I didn't mention Pythagoras at any point, but that's ask, next show.
Let's say I've served left side. They've returned to the middle. I'm going to take a forehand in the middle. I'm pretty much in the middle of the court. Is there any advantage to aiming between the players at the lowest part of the net with a drop? Because I'm halfway through the transition zone. I know I can make that shot. Versus going for what I would typically do is the left side player's corner is what I would typically drop it into. Is there any advantage whatsoever with the riddle in the middle, or do you still just give yourself that few extra milliseconds of getting in by hitting it to that angle?
Yeah, I love the way that you're thinking, but it starts with their ball placed you in the middle of the court. So we really didn't get any geometric benefits to a cross-court shot because you're in the middle of the court. So I'm fine with you going to either corner. If you're going to pick a corner, at this point, you may as well pick the left side player's low backhand in a right-handed world. But yes, there are advantages to the middle. We get a slightly lower net, and we cause a little bit of confusion between the two of them. But we do give up a little bit of verticality. There's only going to be 7 feet to drop this ball into. But I don't mind a combination of the two. I would like to circle back to our earlier example. If you're in a corner, if you're on your own side and you've made the decision, I need to drop the ball into the kitchen, it is best to consider your opponents who are at the non-volley zone as fully ambidextrous. I get players too frequently prioritizing their backhand on the other side and they dump the ball into the net. Prioritize the angle. Prioritize the landing space first. And a distant second is which hand they're going to use to get the ball back. First things first, let's get that ball into the kitchen.
What about if we had to create a universal rule in pickleball? As, okay, I want to win a game. Let's start there. Let's talk about the opponent's feet. What's the rule about the opponent's feet?
Hit the ball at their feet, wherever the heck their feet are on the court.
If you can see their feet, hit their feet.
Yeah, if we're at the non-volley zone and we can hit down, let's hit it vertically speaking where their feet are. And to clarify on this, because we've mentioned this from time to time, the ball doesn't have to hit their feet. It's just vertically speaking, wherever their feet are, we can go in the space between the two players, but let's get the ball to bounce approximately where their feet are. If they're in the transition zone and we have an overhead smash, let's not hit down into the kitchen, have that ball lose all of its energy and momentum and then come up softly to their waist. Let's hit an angle such that the ball goes toward where their feet are. Again, it can be in the open space. It doesn't have to be at their feet. And if they're back toward the baseline, as we know, it's best to get the ball back to where their feet are, not have it bounce 8 feet in front of them.
It's so funny when you said that about the overhead. I was just about to use that as an example. We did a point breakdown reaction video. We've done two of them now. And by the way, you guys, they're both on YouTube. I uploaded the second one to YouTube a couple of days ago. The first one went kind of viral for us because we just started the YouTube channel and had about, 30 people as subscribers. But then that video got like 3,000 views, which was cool. The second one hasn't done that well yet. The algorithm hasn't given it some love. But in that video, you see Eric Lang going overhead to overhead to overhead. And one of them, he does exactly what you just said, where he really slams it down just right after the kitchen. And by the time it gets to the opposing player, it's an easy backhand. Like they take a full swing, like they're doing a ground stroke in that point. So it would have been way more effective. Not that it's easy when you're in the middle of the point, but way more effective to hit that ball right at their feet. Way harder to dig out, especially when you're all the way back at the baseline. Dig out a really deep ball to your feet and then try to get it back with some sort of reasonable momentum, because usually it just, if it even makes it back over, it's a duck and you can just put it right away.
I spoke to Eric after that match and before we did the point breakdown, and he fully admitted he should have ended the rally rather early on by hitting his first overhead smash toward Jade's feet, and they let them off the hook. And then Jade and Riley got themselves established behind the baseline. Eric started getting the ball a little bit deeper, but they were 25, 30 feet away and two of the best defensive players in the game, so they missed their chance and the rest is history.
I think it's hard when you came from tennis and that exact same overhead in tennis goes five rows into the stands, which just blasts out of the court and there's no way you can get a racket on it. So I think maybe it's a surprise, much like when I first started playing pickleball and I would be waiting for the overhead and completely whiff on it because the ball didn't drop as quickly as I expected it to coming from tennis. That's neither here nor there.
Yeah, when you're 6'4 with the pedigree of tennis that Eric comes from, that may have been just kind of stuck in the DNA and that's what he went for and it didn't work out because it's a plastic ball and they made some amazing defensive plays.
All right, guys, to summarize, intentionality. So let's make sure when we hit a ball, you've got some sort of intention behind it. Your dinking targets are each outside corner as well as the right side player's left foot. Speed up targets, generally when someone's holding a backhand shield, their right shoulder is our first choice. I guess right hip, Scott, would that be second choice in that case?
Yeah, so the chess that you and I played a little bit, once you started catching on to right shoulder, you had to slide right in order to be able to deal with that with your backhand. So I just prioritized, I'm going to go toward your left, kind of the area that you vacated, and I'm not going to hit the net. The secondary target was something to your left. The primary target was your right shoulder.
Okay. The first shot is not the winner. So make sure you set up these balls and then put it away. Subsequent shots, get yourself a Diego. And if you're coming in, you're in the transition zone, give yourself a little bit more of a chance, a little more court by a diagonal drop versus a straight ahead. The exception being possibly if you are short in the middle and you can put the ball right between them. Does that sound about right, Scott? Oh, and if you can see their feet, hit their feet.
Yeah, and one other reason here on the 4-0 to Pro Show to avoid the straight ahead transition zone drop is the Ernie. The players we're playing against, they're looking for that straight ahead drop and they're ready to Ernie that ball. So let's go cross court. Makes it a little harder.
All right, guys, go out there, get better on the pickleball courts. Thank you guys so much, as always, for listening. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.